Hey everyone, this is Leah. We have an exciting announcement. For the first time ever, the Tribeca Film Festival is accepting submissions for podcasts and audio stories. That means you can submit pretty much any story you want to tell with only audio, fiction or narrative nonfiction, 10 to 90 minutes in length. Podcast submissions opened yesterday, December 2nd, and will close January 29th. Go to tribecafilm.com/submissions to learn more. In honor of this new section, we're bringing you a behind-the-scenes episode about how our submissions process works. We have so many sections, feature films, virtual reality, games, new online work, and hopefully we'll get to dig into those sections in future episodes. But for today, we're going to focus on our shorts program. Normally, this podcast features conversations with the best directors and storytellers in the business, and a lot of them got their start with short films. Mudbound director Dee Reese premiered her first ever film, a short called Orange Bow, at Tribeca. Ryan Coogler, who went on to direct Fruitvale Station and Black Panther, premiered his first ever film, a beautiful short called Locks, at Tribeca as well. So the filmmakers who make it into the festival, they're worth watching. Tribeca's shorts program includes narrative, documentary, animated, and experimental films under 40 minutes long. Narrative is film slang for fiction.
So why make a short film? Well, it's kind of like any art form. You don't jump into the deep end of the pool first because you don't know how to swim yet.
That's Sharon Badal, Vice President of Filmmaker Relations and Short Film Programming at Tribeca.
And once you have made that short, then you're probably going to want people to see it, or at least we hope you do. And that's where a festival comes along.
And that's Ben Thompson, filmmaker relations manager and short programmer at Tribeca. Sharon and Ben decide which short films make it into the festival.
We're sharing one brain at the moment.
And that brain has watched a lot of shorts.
So Sharon is rapidly approaching 20,000 short films for Tribeca only. Between us, I think we're coming up on 30,000 together. Again, for Tribeca alone.
They took time out of their busy schedules to hop on a Zoom with me.
And you've already opened for submissions, right? So you're already getting stuff in?
Tons of stuff.
Yeah?
Almost 3,000. We're going to hit 3,000 soon.
So if you're one of those thousands of filmmakers who submit, it can be tough to just send your work out into the ether.
Hello.
That's my sister, Chloe. She's a writer-director whose shorts have played Seattle International Film Festival, Palm Springs, New Fest, and more. But even still,
it always just feels very mysterious, even though I'm at a point now where I've made a bunch of different things at different levels and in different kind of genres. And I've even met, like, at this point, I know that there are actually people programming the films, and I've met them at festivals that have selected me, and they've been very welcoming to me. But at the same time, the festival process is still kind of mystifying.
So this is your film's journey through our submissions process.
So the film enters the labyrinth of film submission database.
Your film gets assigned to someone on our screening team.
We have a team of, this year we'll probably have close to 30 people. And everyone gets assigned films in their queue.
Everybody watches hundreds of films. We have a very diverse team made up of programmers and film professionals scattered about the globe. The people who have been screening for us have been doing it for many years and have a strong idea of what we're looking for, and, you know, have strong opinions about films as well and can articulate those. So it's a huge team process.
The screeners rate the films on a numerical scale and give 1 to 2 sentences on why they would or would not recommend that Sharon and Ben watch the film.
We want to always make sure that everything that is submitted gets watched, gets reviewed, is fairly evaluated, and that we don't miss anything. I think that's one of the things that all programmers are very conscious about. You know, having a film that would be fantastic for your festival and just it slipping through the cracks.
And Sharon and Ben are watching this initial round of submissions too.
We would call them cold submissions, films that haven't been recommended yet by screeners, but that we're just looking at for the first time.
Yeah, we watch the cold submissions because it's important for us to get a sense of what the lay of the land is. You never know what is going to come in? What is that crop this year? And that helps us determine where the films sit in the world. So maybe last year, a film that wasn't quite on the top is going to make that top tier this year because there are a lot of films that are very minimal COVID stories, et cetera. And so those films are going to place differently, if you will, than they would have.
Any filmmaker submitting to Tribeca has, it's now we have so many, like a few years ago, it's probably a 1 in 4 chance that Sharon and I would just watch it as a cold submission. Now it's probably maybe 1 in 6.
At this point, your film is sitting in the submissions database waiting to be assigned to a screener. One of the things that can help it stand out early is if you have a great logline.
I would encourage every single filmmaker to work on a great, captivating one-sentence logline that makes you want to see the film.
It's really important for filmmakers out there because that's one of the things that catches our eye. Sharon and I are both scanning down the database and reading various short synopses and loglines and thinking, oh, okay, you know, I'm going to pull this out of the database and have a look at it. And this sounds interesting. It's a good way to be eye-catching for the programmers.
What's an example of a good logline or synopsis? What makes that sort of stand out to you?
Well, when we are looking for the logline, it's got to be concise. It should be something that encourages us to want to watch the film. What we don't want is for that synopsis to tell us the story of the film from beginning to end, because then you've just given away the whole story. Nor do we want some really lengthy, drawn out backstory of the film. Why they made it, who it is. The film lives or dies of its own merit.
For example, Johnny discovers a magic pencil that when he draws things, they come to life. I would watch that.
I would watch that.
Right, as opposed to Johnny, a sad and lonely 6-year-old who lives in the wilderness, wakes up one morning and looks around his house. Finally, he sees a, you know, that's not what we're looking for. That's a drawn out story. That's not a log line. And we each have our own favorite things, right? Because this is, it's a job and it's a really hard job. People think, wow, you have a great job. You sit at home in your pajamas and you watch movies all day. Every filmmaker that submits a film to a festival trusts that whoever is watching it is doing that with an open mind, a clear heart, wide awake, attentive, wanting to like it. And so you need to know what stuff you find fun. I like apocalyptic end of the world stories. Ben likes sports stuff. We will pop things into each other's cues. If I read something, I'll say, oh, that's for Ben. And then I'll text him and say, I just put something in your queue. And he will do the same for me because we want to have fun doing the job.
We were speaking about this yesterday, Sharon. We picked 2 films at the same time from the database without realizing that we were both grabbing the same film because it appealed to both of us. It happens a lot.
Just based on logline.
Just based on logline. We were like, like think of 1,000 films in the database. Like Sharon and I picked the same one. About, I think, 2 hours apart from each other. We didn't...
2 hours apart. Yeah.
Without
and
knowing
we both loved it.
Yeah.
And he, yesterday when we were on the phone, because we spend time pretty much every day talking about what we've seen and what we liked. And he said, oh, and this one. And I said, oh, yeah, I watched that one too.
Sharon and Ben whittle down the cold submissions from over 6,000 to several hundred films with top reviews.
Each one of those films gets looked at by Bennett and myself, and those become the contenders. And so from that, let's say 200, we then have to continuously make cuts to get down to that final finite number of slots that are available to us based on the number of programs that we have available to us.
Once Sharon and Ben have watched your film, a bunch of other considerations start kicking in.
details that are very important in the festival submission process are your festival history and your log line or short synopsis, running time, country of origin. Those are the real crucial elements that we are going to look at down the line.
Those crucial details again are log line, country of origin, festival history, and running time. We already talked about logline, but country of origin matters because we want the festival to be as inclusive as possible.
Let's say I'm looking for something. I don't see strong enough representation in that top tier score from a particular country. Then I will go into the next level and look through those reviews and pick films out from there and look at them. And so you're always hunting for what is best out there.
Premiere status is really important. Your film stands a better chance if it hasn't been made publicly available anywhere yet.
Every festival has its own outlook on premiere status. And our outlook is that world premieres get priority. That is because our mission is to discover new talent and bring that talent to an audience and bring that talent to the industry. And if we are only programming shorts that have played at other festivals, we are not doing anything new. Out of the 64 shorts that we programmed for 2020, I believe 40 of them were world premieres. So those are the ones you're going to pay attention to. If you like two films the same, and one's a world premiere and one's a New York premiere, you're going to lean towards the world premiere because that film is new. It's going to get buzz. It's going to get press. It's going to get attention, as opposed to the film that's played at 30 other festivals already. That being said, we mandate a New York regional premiere at minimum. So if it's played in the New York region, there is no way it's eligible at all. But as we are curating, we're going to have international premieres, North American premieres, US premieres, and a small number of New York premieres. And those are the films that we feel very strongly about, that we want to show to our audience, but they are also the last ones that get slotted. And we also do not allow online play, open gate online. We've made an exception this year because of the circumstances of the world, in that if your film has played at a film festival that has pivoted to an online festival with a finite start and a finite end date, you are still eligible for Tribeca. But if you put it up open gate on Vimeo, you put it up on YouTube, you put it anywhere public, that makes it ineligible for the same reason. What is that film going to do for us if it's already available in the world?
What you have to understand about running time or length is how your film will ultimately be programmed. Sharon and Ben are trying to put around 60 short films into about 10 shorts programs. A shorts program is how films are screened at the festival. Audience members will buy a ticket to see a group of shorts rather than one individual short. Some examples from past years are New York Shorts, which featured world premiere stories from, you guessed it, New York, and Shorts LOL, comedies that went off the rails. You can see examples of other past shorts programs on our website.
And we were one of the first film festivals globally to assign a thematic ribbon to the shorts programs. Every festival would be shorts program one, shorts program two, shorts program three. We were the first ones to think about creating a journey for the audience from beginning to end through the program. And that's one of the things that we are known for, is the way we curate each individual program. You want to think about the audience's emotions. You want to think about what they're going to feel like at the end of the program. You can't bounce them around. You can't go from comedic to dramatic to tragic to funny. You have to guide their emotions through a program. And that's what we enjoy doing. We probably spend a month just curating those journeys.
And that's where runtime comes in.
For Tribeca, our official cutoff length is, we go by the Academy guidelines, which is 40 minutes. That being said, for us, and when we are putting together our programs, anywhere between 12 to 16 minutes is kind of that sweet spot, in that you have a lot of shorts that fit together well in that length of time. And when we're putting together a program and we have all of these kind of slots, we can move films that are similar lengths between slots. And the longer you get, the more difficult that becomes. Let's say we have, what, I think 60, 63 slots last year, Sharon?
Yes.
The further you go over like that 20, 25 minute mark, the less slots we have for those films, because they're taking up two slots. So 12 to 16, I think, is a very program-friendly length. That is not to say just make films that are 12 to 16 minutes. Your film is as long or as short as it's going to be, depending on your story. But if you're thinking about submitting to festivals, if you're thinking about the programming process, that's a good length to shoot for. And you can have films that are 20, 23, 24, 25 minutes long that move so quickly and it feels like 15. And you're like, wow, that was over already, because you're sucked in. You're so engaged. You're not looking at your watch. You're not tapping your foot. You're in the film and completely immersed in the story. So it's not an easy art, like, to get the pacing and kind of tone and energy and journey through a film right. But those are the ones that succeed.
And the ending. You have to know when to end your story.
Got to stick the landing.
That's Ben's expression. They didn't stick the landing. And that is absolutely the perfect description. You have to end it satisfyingly.
Curating these shorts into programs is an art in and of itself.
It's like a cocktail party, and these are the hors d'oeuvres. And you want different tastes. You want different textures. You want a sampling of work in a program. You don't want it to look all the same, feel the same, sound the same. So we mix international films with English language films. We mix this kind of looks and feels. You might start out dramatic and end comedic, vice versa, etc. But most importantly, you want the filmmakers to feel that they're part of a journey, that they're not just randomly plunked together in a program with other shorts. That's really important to us. And the themes reveal themselves at the end.
And so, of course, the balance of programming has some effect on which films get selected.
Well, we know we have a finite number of programs. And that means that there's always some heartbreakers. There's always films that you love that there simply isn't room for. And that's why that last cut, that cut from 100 to 60 is brutal.
It's part of the process. Sometimes I'm glad filmmakers don't ever see this, because, you know, their film might be sitting in a program for 3 weeks. And then right at the end, we're like, actually, this pulls it together a little better. And then that one moves out and they're like, no, my film was right there. You know, it's really tough. And you do feel for these films. But both Sharon and I, when we're speaking to filmmakers who didn't get in, we're like, well, you know, you didn't necessarily do anything wrong. We have a finite amount of slots.
That said, there are some common mistakes to look out for.
Feature main credit sequence at the start of a short film. Just get us in. Get us in really, really fast. We need to get into the filmmaker's world, and everybody can be thanked at the end credits. We already talked about endings. Endings to me are the, you know, the end all and be all. If I'm with you all the way and then you flat the ending, I'm not there anymore. The overuse of music, this kind of incessant underscore. I want filmmakers to think very carefully about their films and use music and sound to enhance and punctuate, not to ride 100%, because we want to be with the characters. I want to hear if I'm watching a film about someone that's mountain climbing, I want to hear their boots in the snow. I want to hear the wind. I don't want to hear some score riding underneath, competing with the dialogue in many cases. I would say to filmmakers, after you put that whole score in, listen to it and take half of it out, because you want the film, the visual leads, the sound supports.
Another thing to be aware of is that a lot of filmmakers are submitting narrative dramas.
There is a very big line between dramatic and depressing. If you're funny, for God's sake, make a comedy.
If you are making a drama, realize that everybody else is making a drama as well. And everybody is making a heavy drama. And in this huge kind of massive submissions, I think last year it was 7,000? 6,000 something. The biggest chunk of that is straight narrative drama. And a much smaller kind of slice of that is comedy and uplifting and lighter, or like documentary or animation. There are so many different kind of films you can make.
Sci-fi, late night genre stuff. These are all really great for festivals.
Yeah, because we don't get as many of them. Programmers never look at a program and think, what can we put into this program to make it heavier and more depressing? We're always looking for moments when we can add some levity or some hope.
It can still be a drama, but be hopeful, be inspiring. It can still make you cry, but in a different way than something about death or loneliness or isolation does.
But know that if you're making a narrative drama, in the world in general, you are jumping into the biggest pool with the most amount of films.
At the end of the process, once Sharon and Ben have watched and rewatched films, slotted and reslotted programs,
that lucky 1% gets into Tribeca.
And a lot of great stuff can happen once your film gets into the festival.
So out of the many, many thousands of festivals globally, Tribeca is one of an elite group that is Oscar qualified in all three categories: narrative, documentary, and animation. Every year, except for 2007, we've had shorts that have been nominated and or won the Oscar every year.
Learning to Skateboard in a War Zone, If You're a Girl, which was 2019 Oscar winner for short doc, and A Neighbor's Window, which was the live action nominee that year that, yeah, it also won. In the animation category for the Oscars, we had Dear Basketball, which was Kobe Bryant and Glenn Keane's film, and also Bao, which was the first Pixar animated film that we showed at Tribeca as well. And both of those went on to win the nominated and to win the Oscar. So in every category, I feel we have good representation each year.
And you get to see your film on the big screen.
What's interesting about our job is that we curate the programs in our heads. And the first time we actually see the program is with the audience in the movie theater and the filmmakers. And we're as excited as they are because we want to see if the audience gets it. And that's why our favorite part of the job is actually those first screenings and meeting the filmmakers and seeing what we worked so hard on for 7-8 months come to life.
We may not know you, but we're rooting for you.
So if you have any more questions about the festival, shorts, podcasts, or any other section, or if you went to a Tribeca Talk live and you'd love to hear it again, let us know. Follow us on social @Tribeca or email us at TribecaTalks@gmail.com.